Welcome to episode 1270 of The Sleeper in the Bust. I'm Justin Mason, joined as always on Sundays by Jason Klett. How you doing, my friend?
Hey, I'm doing well. For those of you guys watching a different location, my daughter has a dance competition this weekend up in Concord, North Carolina. So I am sitting in an Embassy Suites lobby. Apologies for any background noise you may hear if I sound differently, but that's why doing this from a USB headset. Hopefully it'll be all right. So again, just apologies in advance if there's any disruptions of screaming kids walking by. But you know, for any of you dance parents, you know what I'm talking about. Dude, the other thing real quick, I was in the coffee shop this morning here, and I overheard one of the other dance moms going, yeah, my husband offered to buy me a mountain house if we quit dancing. And I was like, I got to find this guy. He's my hero. And my daughter loves this stuff, but it is, this time of season between drafts and dance competitions, every weekend is just like a blur. I don't have weekends right now, but we've got plenty of time. We got good stuff to talk about. So let's go.
Yeah, let's do it. We're going to be talking about closers. We've done all the other positions. Paul and I, you and I are going to kind of close out our position previews with closers. We'll just jump right into a little bit of news before you do that. Nouvel Marte was suspended 80 games for PED use. I mean, I guess this is like it's bad timing and everything, but at least we knew before a lot of March drafts happened. Mm-hmm. One, are you drafting him anywhere? And then two, like, how does this affect the rest of the Reds?
Well, one, I feel bad for the guy who ended up taking him 1-1 on a misclick. And that's why Novelli Marte is his min-max is 1 and like 2-something. So I feel really bad for that person now. But no, I'm not taking him anywhere. It's, you know, you got to ride a bench half the season. I mean, if you're in a DC, most DCs are already done now. So if you're in a 50, that's fine. You have them. But other than that, I don't see the upside of taking a guy who's going to have that much of a layoff. I'm drawing a blank on who we had in this situation last year, but they came back and they really weren't that, didn't contribute that much. Or maybe it was 2 years ago. But no, these guys are off my board if I'm in a 23+7 type roster now.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I just don't think that they're worth holding on to, even if you have like an NA spot, like in Yahoo or something. It's just half the season means you're clogging that part of your roster.
But I mean, the rest of the lineup, though, you know, when you look at it, kind of explains the Tony Kemp minor league deal that the non-roster invite deal that they did gives them some depth. You know, Jake Fraley may have some more at bats coming out of here. And Candelario, I was seeing projected as the DH. Now he's firmly entrenched third base cleanup. So whatever bargains you may have been getting on Candelario are going to be gone quickly as people look at that and go, this makes – I like him in that spot. So that's how I see this playing out. Maybe the stability – I mean, we spent all winter talking about, wow, the Reds have got a lot of traffic on the depth chart. Not anymore.
Yeah, and I think that actually clears up a lot of things, especially earlier on in the season, right? Jonathan India has been kind of banged up. Mm-hmm. But he kind of looks like the odd man out of this infield. I think this obviously is huge for Christian Carcino-Strand, who now goes from probably being a bench bat to being a full-time first baseman. Candelario moves to third. I think this gives Ellie De La Cruz a little bit of extra wiggle room, right? I mean, this
still is not worth a second-round pick, buddy. Sorry.
Yeah, I don't think he's still worth a second-round pick, but I think he now becomes much more interesting in the third round.
Didn't you take him in a second and a cut line? Is that what I heard on
the Friday show?
Okay, mm-hmm. That's what the joke was about. But I don't know. I still find a lot of risk with Ellie De La Cruz. You know, we talked about this on the First Pitch online forum yesterday. Yesterday we talked about it a little bit. I still rather have O'Neill Cruz in the 5-6 versus Ellie De La Cruz, who was in the third, who may end up sneaking to the second next weekend. We'll see with that. But I get the upside. I just would rather take a couple around discount on O'Neill Cruz right now than Ellie De La Cruz. It just, again, reminds me of the year that Paul and I were just like all in on Vladimir Guerrero Jr. 2019. We're like, oh, we don't care if he has a net bat. This is a fourth round draft pick. And that didn't work out so well.
Yeah, I get it. But I think now I'm a lot more comfortable. I don't know that I'm going to make the pick of Ellie in the third. Plus, because I don't think he'll be there in the majority of leagues, but I think I'm much more open to it now if he were to fall in a draft. For instance, in the sleeper in the bus listener league, which is a 14-team league, head-to-head, he fell to the like middle, late third. And at that point, like, I was like, okay, if he makes it back around to me in the fourth, I'm jumping on that. But I think at this point, yeah, I mean, it kind of sucks that I've been talking down about Ellie going where he's going all draft season. I still think he's going a little bit too high, but now I could see myself actually doing it. But I doubt there's a chance he's available for me in the majority of formats.
I think tonight, the draft I'm doing tonight, it's a OBP league. For offense, and it's the last, if I'm going to take Ellie De La Cruz, this will be the last time that I have a chance of doing it at the market price. I'm just not, I have the 14th pick in this draft. And so that means I'd have to take him at the end of the third and he'd be gone by then. Even in OBP league, I'm pretty sure somebody else is going to jump in. Cause I know there's one big Reds fan in the league. So I'm assuming that's going to happen.
Yeah. Can't imagine it's available for you at that point in the draft.
And that's okay.
Yeah. Let's talk about some closers. Let's talk about first just kind of your general approach this season. Mm-hmm. In years past, we've had kind of just a massive amount of turnover in terms of closers on a week-to-week or month-to-month basis. But last year, it was actually about as stable as you could ask for. The vast majority of at least the like half upper half of the pool of closers stayed pretty consistent outside of like the Edwin Diaz injury. Are you switching your approach to closers this year?
Not really. And I would say I'm glad you brought that up about the stability, because we saw some stability in that position like we have rarely seen it. We had a couple of issues. Last year going into AL labor, I took Jordan Romano at $18. I took Pete Fairbanks at $12. And I took somebody in the Rangers bullpen, Joe Barlow, and I quickly dropped him, but I still ended up finishing second in saves. It was only off first place by one because of those having those two guys in that. And that's a similar approach that I took this year, probably with a little more uncertainty risk, taking Mason Miller as my second guy. But I still want one of those top five, six guys. Like I haven't come out of the draft like, ooh, I have to have Class A. Ooh, I got to have Hader. I got to have Diaz, even though in some drafts I have that. But I want to have one of those guys and then want to come down to like that middle tier, and then I want to take a spec on a guy. So in AL labor, it was I took Andrés Muñoz. I took Mason Miller. I took Brock Stewart because I really like the skills on Brock Stewart and the fact that he's got a starter's repertoire in the bullpen, even though I'm not planning on Yoan Duran having any issues. But Brock Stewart, I think, could have a nice role in the back end of the bullpen. And then I took Gregory Santos in the reserves because, you know, this was pre the Ryan Stanek signing, and this was while they were still uncertain news around Matt Brash's shoulder issue. So I've got a second option in that Seattle bullpen to help ensure my first pick there, because I really like the Seattle bullpen. So that's been my approach, and I really haven't changed things. I'm not planning to, because we'll find some stuff. I mean, usually there's about 30% of saves pop up on free agents wire during the season. I don't expect that to change on the whole, but we may see some of that surefire things. Like, again, with Emmanuel Classe, he has pitched a lot in the last 2 years under Tito Francona. I'm really curious to see how Stephen Vogt manages Emmanuel Classe, and if he's able to hold up to that workload that that Francona's put him under the last couple of years.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. I still want to pay for my saves. I know there's still like this idea like, oh, saves come on the waiver wire, I can just, you know, pick them up in season, kind of grabs too late guys. I understand why the strategy is the way it is. However, I just think it is flawed, because the idea that like you're going to be the only one finding saves on the wire,
right,
isn't true. Like if I draft two, you know, lockdown closers in the draft, I'm still looking for a third guy on the waiver wire all year long. You know, I'm just not having to spend as much or be quite as active. And you're going to pay for saves one way or another. You're either going to pay for him at the draft table, or you're going to pay for him in FAB. And I'd rather spend my FAB, you know, plugging holes that pop up that happen after I get out of the draft. So I still think it's important to at least lock down one of these kind of, you know, first or second options. And then, you know, maybe if you want to play it a little more risky with your second or third guy, I get it. But for me, I tend to want to get one of these guys out of this first tier if I can, a second guy out of the second or third tier, and then, you know, I'll fish around for other guys as well.
Yeah, and you know, for when I'm looking at categorical targets and whatnot, I'm usually aiming for the 80th percentile in nine categories. Saves is the one that I'm cool aiming at the 50th percentile, because I want to be in there to play. I'm not in there to be like, oh, I've got a lockdown saves. Oh, I've got that. You know, again, last year when it was, when I took the Fairbanks and Romano duo, Fairbanks was, I was on the high end for Fairbanks. Everybody's like, dude doesn't pitch enough. Rays never use it because it's the closer, blah, blah, blah. And most of that, he still barely got the 50 innings, but he got a majority of those saves. And so that's what helped me out there. But at the time I made that, he was a very low tier two guy that I thought could make the step up. And then this year in drafts, he's not coming in any kind of discount like he was last year. I mean, the season started, I took him for $3 in XFL. And I threw him out at one. Somebody said two. I said three. And they're like, fine, we just didn't want you to have him for a dollar type of situation. But again, I usually aim for the 50th percentile in saves, just so I'm in there competing and I'm not trying to chase them all year.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. Let's talk about the first tier. It's Devin Williams, Edwin Diaz, Josh Hader, Emmanuel Clase. I don't think we need to necessarily go into each individual guy. I think they're all fairly elite options. Mm-hmm. Is there one that you're targeting over another, and is there one or two that maybe you're avoiding?
So I have had, I mentioned Clase again, just the volume that he's been using and the uncertainty around how Stephen Vogt's going to do that. Stephen Vogt has no managerial history. We don't know what could happen. He could just be like, okay, fine, I'm just going to keep throwing him out there. He's my best weapon. Or he could start using him in the seventh, eighth. We don't know. So that uncertainty kind of bothers me a little bit. I would say I have zero reservations using Edwin Diaz as the top overall closer this year. Zero. You know, with him coming off the injury was a leg injury, not an arm injury. He's fully rehabbed that. I would be right back in on the Edwin Diaz market price that he was going at before the injury last year in the World Baseball Classic. So I would have, you know, wouldn't surprise me if he comes out and finishes the season as closer one this year.
Yeah, I'm a little bit more tentative on Edwin Diaz just coming off of the injury. I know he's looked good in spring, but you just never know how a guy's going to react to kind of coming off of that kind of serious injury. Mm-hmm. I'm less scared about Emmanuel Clase. I understand that Vogt has not had that, that managerial experience to kind of show us what he's going to do, but unless I hear something otherwise, I'm just not super, super worried. And he's the one who drops kind of, tends to drop in this tier. So he's one of the guys that I end up with a lot. No worries at all about Devin Williams. No worries at all about Josh Hader. Hader's been my mm-hmm. number one closer so far this offseason. You know,
and
you know,
I have all four of these guys in different, when I was looking at it, I have all four of these guys in different drafting holds and whatnot. All four of these guys have ended up on my roster.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. All right, let's move on to the second tier. Johan Duran, Jordan Romano, Camilo Duvall, Rossiel Iglesias, and David Bednar. Any concerns about any of these guys in particular?
So looking through, and I wanted to make this point about Diaz and why I feel that he has a chance of being the top overall closer. It's like when we look at this tier, especially at Rossiel Iglesias, if Atlanta is 100-plus win team again, like I tend to want my closer one on a team that's in the 85 to 95 win range, because they're playing a lot of close games and those guys are in there a lot. So that's why I like Duvall here. That's why I like Bednar particularly here, because I worry that Iglesias is going to be left on the outside looking in sometimes, because the Braves can just lay a whooping on a team and he doesn't get his save chances. And the same thing's going to apply to Evan Phillips. While Dodgers could be 110 plus win team when we get down to the Phillips, but that's my concern with him. But I love this tier. I would love, like, I think Johan Duran is a tier one guy. I think he has the chance to be a tier one guy in this, and the stuff is just amazing. And I know I said earlier I took Brock Stewart, but that was not because I have any reservations about Johan Duran. It's just that I'm looking at, you know, other things happen in bullpens, and Brock Stewart just looks to me as a guy that could be one of those middle relievers that brings a lot of value this year in a mono league. So I would say the only other concern I have here is the back issue that Jordan Romano had twice last year. Does that flare up again? Because yeah, there are other options. Nate Pearson looks really good this spring with that splitter he's added. Chad Green is fully recovered from his injury and whatnot. So there are other options in that Toronto bullpen. And I just need to make sure that Romano doesn't have the back flare up again that lingered around last year.
Yeah, I don't really have any major concerns about this tier at all. I mean, I think that, you know, all these guys are kind of locked down closers. I think the only one that I'm a little bit less high on than you and I think the rest of the industry is Duran. And it has nothing to do with Duran. Duran is just an absolutely electric reliever. Mm-hmm. It's the usage of Minnesota. They like to sometimes bring him in other spots that wouldn't be saves. Now, you'll still get really, really good innings and strikeouts, so there's nothing wrong with taking him. I just don't know if he's going to compile the saves in the same way that maybe like an Iglesias or a Bednar or a Doval or a Romano will. And so for me, he's kind of at the bottom of this tier, but like I'm not concerned he's going to lose his job at any point.
Right. Yeah. And that's, and you know, we could apply the same thing. You know, Baldelli comes from the Tampa Bay coaching tree, and Stephen Vogt played in Tampa Bay for a bit, but you know, he's from, and then he was in Oakland. So we, you know, he's got that coaching tree where it's just like, oh, hey, you don't have to use your closer in the ninth inning type of situation. You know, we could say the same thing about Derek Shelton, who runs David Bednar. Yeah. So it's a lot of this comes into play, but my biggest reservation here is just that if Atlanta's too good, Iglesias is not going to get the volume of saves that we would expect from, you know, hey, the team that wins the most should have a guy that has the most saves. That doesn't, if you go back and look at articles and the research on that, the sweet spot is in that 85 to 95 range, because the teams that are too good aren't playing enough close games for those saves.
I think the one thing that helps Iglesias is that rotation isn't as good as maybe it looks on paper, right? Charlie Morton has been kind of mediocre to bad last year. Chris Sale, what are we going to actually get out of him? And then right now, Ronaldo Lopez is their fifth starter, and I've made it very clear how I feel about that.
You and me, we're both on the same page. When the signing happened, and I was like, oh, they're putting them in the bullpen, I love this for them. And then they're like, oh, we're putting them in the rotation. I'm like, ew, please don't.
Yeah, I don't understand that move. But so I think Iglesias will be fine. I mean, he had like 30-some saves last year. I think he'll probably be there this year again. All right, let's move on to the third tier. These are guys who either have a little bit shakier skills or maybe a little bit shakier hold on the role. Any concerns about any of these guys? This is Alexis Diaz, Paul Sewald, Andres Munoz, Ryan Helsley, and Pete Fairbanks.
Well, I took Munoz, but I would say it wasn't a target you know, I've talked often that I like to group guys around. He was in that group. He came up. He came out at the price that I had budgeted. So that's how I ended up with Munoz. You know, Fairbanks still is the, can he pitch more than 50 innings in a season? The skills wise, we know it's there, but that health skill has always been a question mark. It was last year, and he ended up earning what I paid for him last year, but it's still, until he pitches more than 50 innings, it's still a risk. Diaz with the ball, we saw a little bit last year where he ran into some issues with walks and homers, but eventually settled down. You know, this is, and I don't really know what to do with this tier. Like you said, there are some risk, but I've already taken one of these guys as a closer one in a mono league. In a mixed league, I'd almost feel fine walking out of with two of these guys, staying out of this top two tiers and taking two of these guys and then finding a fifth tier guy later.
Yeah, I don't mind that, especially if like the one guy is Alexis Diaz. To me, Diaz is kind of my favorite guy out of this tier. I know he pitches in Cincinnati. He can have command and control problems at times, but I think he's ultimately just the diet version of his brother, Edwin, which is, you know, pretty amazing.
Crystal Pepsi version.
Yeah, exactly. If there's one guy in this tier that really scares me, it's Ryan Helsley.
You know,
he was injured last year. I don't know what the Cardinals are really going to do in the ninth inning. They seem to kind of want to bring different guys in at times. He's been kind of the one guy in this tier that I'm avoiding for the most part. Munoz was a guy that I was kind of avoiding until the Brash injury. And then, now that the Brash has been injured and it looks like Munoz is just the dude, like I'm a little bit less worried about his usage But any one of these guys, I would be fine with. I'm more likely, I prefer one of these guys to be my RP2. And to be quite honest, if I don't have my second RP by this point, and I don't get Alexis Diaz, I tend to just kind of wait for the next tier. But I don't have any problems with any of them. Like, I was one of the big anti-Fairbanks guys last year. I'm not as much this year, but I'm still not getting him in a lot of spots.
Yeah, no, I was out in the island last year. It's okay. But I could see if you, in a particular build, I could see somebody double tapping here, like around, what, 9, 10, 10, 11, mate? I don't know if I think it's too late, but I could see somebody on the turn double tapping closers here and be like, these are my first two guys, and I could get behind that.
All right. Let's move on into the fourth tier. I think this one's going to involve a little bit more discussion. we've got Evan Phillips, Tanner Scott, Kenley Jansen, Clay Holmes, Craig Kimbrell, and Adbert Alzolay. To me, there is one guy that is clearly above the rest. I don't even know why he's down here in terms of – I did these tiers by ADP, though it was a couple weeks ago, so things may have changed a little bit. I think Adbert Alzolay is the guy who probably deserves to be in the above tier. What are your thoughts on this tier? Are these guys you're targeting or avoiding?
So I have ended up with Alzolay in one league, but I've ended up with Jansen in three of them. Only because when you look at the tier, it's like, okay, he keeps falling to the 12th round. And if he's going to fall here, I'm going to take him here. And I know there's a lot of reservation, like, oh, he's in the final year of his deal, he's going to be traded. Well, so is Chris Martin. Chris Martin's in the last year of his deal. And so both of those guys could be gone. But by the time they're traded, if I can get 15 or so saves out of Jansen, I'll take him and worry about it later. Because even if he's traded, what team is trading for him as a setup guy?
I think so that's the point, right? Like, if Jansen's traded, he's going to be the closer of the Dodgers, right? Or, yes, you know, the closer of whatever team he ends up with. He's not being traded into a setup role. At least I don't think he is.
Yeah, exactly. And then with Alzolay, like I said, I got him in one league, and I know that I know a lot of people are like, oh, hey, Hector Neris signed there, he's got good stuff. But Hector Neris, the foundational skills last year worry me quite a bit. But I, you know me, Julia Merriweather and me are going to ride or die together. And if I'm in a deeper league, I'm taking a spec on Julian Merriweather late, because the stuff was so good last year. Go look at the stuff plus. It's there. He's got the stuff. It's just that health grade has always been an F minus for him. But I've taken Alzolay, but in that same league, I did take, it was a draft and hold, I did take Julian Merriweather late.
Yeah, I mean, I love Alzolay. He's been my top target in this tier. I don't know why I feel so iffy about Clay Holmes. I think Clay Holmes has got the job there in New York. What are your thoughts on him?
I would say I have a couple of shares of Ian Hamilton, just in case. And I've got one of Tommy Canley, just in case. So I've liked picking up some of that. With that, I would say, too, Clay Holmes, you know, can definitely do the job. I don't think he has a short leash, but with the way that Aaron Boone likes to use his bullpen in a mono league, I don't mind taking those guys and specking on that. I think that, honestly, the biggest concern for me, I already talked about Evan Phillips and the Dodgers being too good, but it's the Tanner Scott situation. He's having trouble throwing strikes this spring, and that's always been Tanner Scott. That's bugaboo. And when he throws strikes, he's got the stuff to be amazing, as we saw down the stretch last year in August and September when he took over that Marlins closing job and just ran with it. But if he can't command stuff, it gets ugly in a hurry. And that's, to me, it's like last year, I've told this a few times, like last year was the first year I didn't come out of drafts with some shares of Tanner Scott, because I've always thought he could be a closer. And then I was just like, I'm tired of the 5+ walks per nine. This is not going to happen. And then he ended up winning people's leagues last year. And I just remember looking at him and passing on him out of that curse of knowledge, like, nope, sorry, don't want to touch him. But of this tier, he's the one that worries me the most. You know, Craig Kimbrell, I know he's got his flaws, but I feel that the pitching with what do we call the giant wall in Camden? I forget the nickname for it, but that's going to help. That's going to help take away some of those home runs that have hurt him.
Yeah, I definitely have concerns. Like, well, let me talk about the guy I don't have concerns about that we haven't talked about, or at least that I haven't talked about. You talked about Kenley Jansen. Kenley Jansen's a closer, right? He's a closer in Boston. If he gets traded, which I think there is a really good chance he gets traded to the Dodgers, then he's still the closer of the Dodgers. Mm-hmm. So, like, if you're getting a huge discount, which I have a bunch on Kenley Jansen, like, I'm totally fine with. I'm only really concerned with Evan Phillips because I think that the Dodgers will trade for Kenley Jansen. If the Dodgers just came out and said, like, Evan Phillips is our dude, like, and we're not trading for another closer, like, I would probably move Evan Phillips up into at least the third tier, if not the second tier. I think the skills are amazing. I just do worry that they're going to just supplant him and put him as a setup guy. The two guys I'm not drafting this tier are Craig Kimbrel and Tanner Scott. I see all these things that you see with Tanner Scott in terms of the control. And I do wonder if he ends up losing that job. If, you know, I know AJ Puck's trying to become a starter right now.
Andrew Nardi.
Yeah, but I think Andrew Nardi, the guy that Paul has been kind of pumping all off season, could be the guy who's kind of next up in that bullpen. Drafted him in a dynasty league, the Sleeper on the Bus dynasty league yesterday. Or actually, no, it was a different dynasty league yesterday. Just on a spec that he could be getting some saves here if Kenneth Scott can't figure out the command and control issues that we've seen in spring and seen from him a ton in the past. Plus, Anthony Bender's making his way back. He was a closer before he got hurt. So I just think there are a lot of options in Miami that could lead to him losing his job. I just don't trust Kimbrel. I know it's a great park, but I just, and I know that he had like a, you know, a decent season, but I just really, really don't trust him. They've got Cano in that bullpen that they can turn to. And this is a team that expects to compete for another division title. Won it last year. They want to get back to the playoffs. They're a little bit more loaded than they were even last year. I think that they are going to have him on a short leash. If Craig Kimbrel cannot figure it out at some point, he's going to lose that job. And for that reason alone, I'm pretty much out on Kimbrel.
Yeah, and I would say I have not taken Kimbrel or Scott in any leagues this year. And you know, Kimbrel, he would be one of those guys that, like, if he fell, I'm like, I'd be interested. This was one of the reasons why I was interested in DL Hall before they traded him away. I thought DL Hall was going to be a major factor in this bullpen with this, because Cano, as great as he was for a long part of the season, towards the end, he looked terrible, absolutely terrible. And Danny Colombe, yeah, that's how you pronounce his last name. He looked good back there. And Dylan Tate's going to make his way back. But, you know, Baltimore winning 101 games last year, they're going to take a step back this year. There's not a step forward as good as their youth is. You know, they go look at their close and late. I see them in that 85 to 95 win sweet spot. So if Kimbrel can avoid the flaws that have hurt him, he could be in for a huge season. But like you said, they've got other options too. And if he falls into one of those ruts that's hurt him in the past, he may not get back, because he's just on a 1 year, $13 million deal. It's not like they've got to, like, oh, hey, we paid this guy. I mean, it is what it is. So the opportunity is there for him to be a massive bargain down here. But at the same point, there is some risk.
Yeah. All right, let's move into the last tier. And we'll take kind of these one by one, because these are all situations that could be a little bit muddy. This is where a lot of people are shopping for either second or third closer. So let's start with Alex Lang in Detroit. I think he's the guy, but there's Jason Foley. There is Shelby Miller. Do you think Alex Lang is the dude at least to start the year? And how confident would you be that he could keep it?
I think he is the dude on the shortest leash. He's on like a 3-foot USB cable type of leash, because we looked at, there were times last year where Alex Lang could come into the game and could not throw a strike, and they would yank him out and bring Jason Foley in. But you know, Shelby Miller brings the experience. Andrew Chafin's back on this team as well, and he has experience. They have options here, and Alex Lang, for all of his, you know, he's got great stuff, but he falls into that Tanner Scott bucket where it's like, if he can't command it, doesn't matter how good the stuff is. And so for me, this would be when I was looking down in this tier saying, okay, who really concerns me down here the most? He's right at the near the top of the list of, if I end up with him as my closer too, then I better have a stronger closer. I better have a stronger spec. I mentioned earlier about my $18.12 and $2 plan that I ran last year, and this year it was kind of like $18.10 and $1 type of situation. But I would need to spend more than $2 or $1 on that third reliever if Alex Lang was my second reliever here.
Yeah, I feel like he has the job to start, but when you've got his kind of control issues, like, that could change in a hurry. Yep. So I did take him as my third closer in labor, mm-hmm. but it was $2 and I was willing to risk like $2 to say like, hey, maybe I'll get some early saves even if he loses job. Yeah, it's fine. So let's move on over to Philadelphia. Jose Alvarado seems to be the guy that they're kind of moving forward with. Mm-hmm. But you and I, and Paul's included on this, have a guy that we prefer over kind of Alvarado, especially at the price. But there's even more guys who are in Philadelphia that could get involved. You've got Sir Anthony Dominguez. A lot of people are in on Orion Kirkring. Obviously, I already mentioned Jose Alvarado, but you and I, and Paul, all like Jeff Hoffman. What's your take on this bullpen?
Yeah, and to me, I've been beating the Jeff Hoffman drum all winter long. He was one of the best relievers last year. You go back and look at expectable, but everything he did, you know, he's been able to put – we knew we had talent, but Colorado and Cincinnati weren't the best places for him. In Philadelphia, he just hit the ground running. And when I look at the Jose Alvarado, and when I look at the Jose Alvarado situation, let's not forget that he twice went on the IL last year with arm issues. And for the most part of his career, he has had trouble commanding the strike zone. And there are times like that, like any other reliever with his stuff, when he's throwing strikes, he can be amazing. But when he's not, it's tough to watch. And so to me, I've been taking Hoffman. I would have 100% shares of him in NFBC if Ray Murphy didn't snipe me in the 28th round in TGFBI. It's the only league that I have not taken Jeff Hoffman. I have him everywhere because I look at the market price and the discount, you're getting him in the reserves and the stuff he had last year. And Alvarado, again, two arm issues last year with that. And I think it's being overlooked when you look at that. But as you said, there are multiple options back there. Dominguez has done it previously. I love Kirkering's slider, but Kirkering's sample size is shorter than Alex Lang's leash. And that's my concern with Kirkering, because you look through his numbers and he's had trouble throwing strikes. We really haven't seen him stay any one place too long. He pitched at USF, boo. But you know, in the minors, again, the slider's amazing. I'm not discounting the slider, but people are sleeping on Jeff Hoffman. It would not surprise me if Hoffman finishes the season as a tier 2-3 guy. If he got this job out of camp, if they came out and surprised everybody and said Hoffman's our closer, I think he's a tier 2 guy.
Yeah, I'm right there with you on Hoffman. I do think this is a muddied situation that could be a little bit frustrating, especially early on. But I think that Hoffman is the guy to own, at least for me. I know everybody's in on Orion Kirkring as the dude, but I just think he's the fourth option, maybe even the fifth option, because you've got Gregory Soto there as well, who closed out games in Detroit before getting traded. So,
right.
To me, I think Hoffman is just so cheap that I'm going to take the gamble there.
Yes.
But I'm going to be ready to pivot really quickly if somebody establishes themselves.
But I would say this Soto is to use your earlier reference, Soto was the diet version of Jose Alvarado. Same guy.
Yeah.
Same potential issues with that. But there's a lot of options here. But Hoffman, to me, is the one to be targeting here, just because of the skills, what he's able to do. And the current price could not be better. He continues to sit there in the reserve rounds. And if you don't take him to reserve, somebody's going to be paying triple digits for Fab. This is like one of the things you don't want to do is like, oh, I got to go spend this money on a closer and Fab. Get him now while you have the opportunity. And if it doesn't play out, then you can cut him and then go pick up somebody. But these skills are too good to be falling this far down draft boards.
Yeah, I'm in complete agreement with you. Let's talk about the Angels situation. Carlos Estevez was a guy that people were really worried about his command and control coming into last season. Mm-hmm. He ends up just holding the job pretty much all year round. They've brought in Robert Stevenson, who is electric in Tampa Bay. And a lot of people think Stevenson is going to take this job at some point. I tend to think that maybe Estevez just holds it back down again. Where are you at on this Angel situation?
Yeah, and this is one I got to think about more before I go to Ale Tout. It's this one I took. So I took Stevenson in the third round of TGFBI, I believe, as my third reliever. So I was like, I'll take the chance on him. I loved what he did last year when he came to Tampa Bay, and they were like, hey, stop throwing this pitch and we want you to do more of this. And it just, he took off. He was amazing. I just never had the opportunity to close because they had Adam and they had Fairbanks in front of them. Estevez, you know, he was somebody that I was high on coming into last year because the price was dirt cheap and we were able to get some nice run. I know that talking with Drew Forte, he said that Carlos Estevez was somebody who really helped him in the league. And he was, and because he was like, yeah, you were one of the few people that were talking about him. And, you know, that came through. So I think there's a nice opportunity to take advantage of a discount here because of that uncertainty. But it would not surprise me if Stevenson leads the way by season's end. But I'm fine taking Estevez like in a mono league. I'm fine taking him as a lower end second closer and just getting what I can out of him until he's not doing it. But they do have, you know, last year there really wasn't a fallback option. Now they have one.
Yeah, I think that it's more likely than not that SOS enters with the role, especially Stevenson kind of being slowed down with you know, whatever shoulder, I think, injury it was coming into camp. So but yeah, it's just a situation you want to kind of monitor, because you're right. I mean, Stevenson is the best reliever that they've got in the bullpen. And they definitely did not have that kind of guy last year. So if Estevez struggles mightily in season, maybe Stevenson could take it over. But I'm still drafting Estevez over Stevenson as we speak. Mm-hmm. All right, let's talk about San Diego's situation. Obviously, a huge hole left when Josh Hader left to go to Houston. Robert Suarez seems like the most likely guy kind of stepping in because of the contract that he's got. He's pitched in the major leagues. The other two guys that are coming in are both coming over from Asia. Are you banking on Robert Stevenson, or are you going to a different route?
So Suarez is what you meant to say there.
Sorry.
Yeah, no, I would have no problem taking Robert Suarez where he's going right now. Yeah, so it's, if as long as he pitches to his abilities, he could have this job all season. You see the Padres closer to that 85 win spectrum than 95. He could find himself in a lot of close games, and he should be able to get the volume here. And so I don't feel that Matsui or De Los Santos are a imminent threat to that job. And so I think some of that market uncertainty right now with Suarez, the fact that he's down here. I mean, he's got the stuff to be a tier four guy. It's just that, oh, they also brought these guys in. So we think that this may be an issue and it may be pushing down his value. But again, at the end of the day, you're always looking for guys at a tier five that jump up. And Suarez really fits that profile rather nicely, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think Suarez is the dude. I know a lot of people are interested in Matsui especially, but I just think Suarez is the guy. He's been so good when healthy. I know he was a little bit bumpier last year, but I just think he's going to get that job and kind of hold on to it. He's been my favorite kind of pivot candidate if I don't get two closers somewhere along the lines, or mm-hmm. my favorite, you know, RP3 candidate if I'm willing to spend up a little bit on that third RP. So Suarez in this tier is my favorite guy. And the guy I've been kind of pivoting to quite a bit this offseason.
Yeah.
All right. Now, in order to get saves, your team has to actually win the game, which makes it really, really difficult to get saves out of Oakland. Mason Miller has been kind of the highest drafted guy, but it seems pretty clear to me that he is probably not going to close in Oakland, that he's going to mm-hmm. be a multi-inning reliever. As they kind of try to limit his potential innings, considering his injury profile. Lucas Urseg, if you remember him, he was a kind of a top-tier hitting prospect at one point that has transitioned to being a pitcher. You also have Danny Jimenez, who's done the job, I guess, before in Oakland. Is there an Oakland reliever worth drafting?
So let's not, again, Trevor May saved 21 for this team last year. So there's a chance whoever gets this job could save 15 plus. Even if the team's a little worse, they could save 15 plus. And so there's still value in that. Even if you're a 15 team mix, you're obviously an AL. I mentioned I took Mason Miller for $8 in labor with that, because he is the best pitcher maybe on the staff totally. I mean, JP Sears may be like, hey, what about me? I know I pitch for a bad team. But Mason Miller has just got incredible stuff. Incredible stuff. I also worry that the next pitch he throws could be the last one he throws this year. Last year he looked great out of the gate. Then the forearm strain was gone 3 months. And they're already talking about wanting him to get into that closer role. So I have with that uncertainty, I'm still willing to take a chance on what is a third reliever in this 15 team mix, because you can replace that. I'm not saying go out there and get Miller as your second. I know I did an AL labor, but in the mono league, it's different. There's only so many of these guys that you can do. So, but since most listeners are in that 15 team or 12 team format, taking this guy as a closer three is a fine spec. Urseg, it's the walks. I mean, he's got great stuff. You look at it, but the walk rate has been a problem all throughout for him. And anytime you're making that transition from hitting to pitching, it's going to take a while to get to that. But that said, I've taken Urseg in a couple of drafting holds too. Even if I didn't have Miller, because there's that opportunity, somebody is going to get double digit saves out of this for this ball club. It just has to happen. So we'll take the chances there. Jimenez has done it before, but he's the third option to me out of this pen.
If I'm in a regular league, right, even a 15 teamer that's 30 rounds deep, I'm not drafting any of these guys. I just don't care. Like, I just don't think there's enough juice, especially in a shared bullpen in Oakland, to profit that much. And I think it's one of those situations where you could see like seven or eight guys getting saves on a team that may get a total of 30 saves throughout the year. So I just don't really care. In a draft and hold, I've been drafting Danny Jimenez because he's done the job before, and often managers just like to go to the guy that has done it. But I mean, it's just a draft and hold. We're talking like, 30 or probably 40 something a round. I'll take a shot on Danny Jimenez, but ultimately I just don't care enough to draft any of these guys. All right, speaking of another really, really bad team, we have Washington, who have Hunter Harvey and Brandon Finnegan. Do you care about either of these guys?
We're in the same place we were last year. This is exactly where we were last year with these two. And we're like, and people were like, oh, let's spec on Hunter Harvey. And yeah, it is what it is. I would apply the same situation to what we just said about Oakland. Somebody has to save these games. Kyle Finnegan was a trade risk last year, but if he gets traded somewhere, it's likely not to close. So I will take a cheaper spec as a closer three on one of these guys, but this would be like super end game. I would not be, there are several options I like better in this tier. These two were not one of them.
Yeah, I tend to just avoid this. I mean, I think Finnegan is just going to be the guy. Like, I know everybody wants Hunter Harvey to take the job over. The skills are better. Dude can't stay healthy. And Finnegan just keeps getting it done. Plus, I think they really want to trade Finnegan at some point this year. So the best way to do that is just kind of continue to build up his value. I just don't know if half a season from Finnegan and then get traded into a non-closer role makes sense in Washington. I just don't know that there's going to be enough wins in the first half of the season for him to, give you a huge return in terms of saves. Maybe he gets 10, 12, something like that in the first half, and then you can drop him in the second half. But I think there's just as good as chance that he ends up like six.
Yeah.
And like in torches your ratios. And that. So I just don't want to, pay for that at all.
The Sean Chacon of the East Coast.
Let's talk about the Royals, because the Royals are a really interesting team. They brought in Will Smith. It seemed like he was kind of going to be the guy, even though James MacArthur was, really good at the end of last season. But then they just kept bringing in guys left and right. This is a team that I really like, that I think has enough juice to actually win that division. They're my dark horse AL Central division winner. Where are you at on the saves in Kansas City? Is it going to be Will Smith, the established guy, or somebody else?
And that's the thing. Last year, I was like, why is this team signing Will Smith? And then the previous season, why is this team signing Will Smith? And then it works. So I can't discount Will Smith. I would be happy to end up with Will Smith on a team, because wherever he falls, the experience thing plays out and he ends up getting some saves. That said, like you said, there are multiple options. MacArthur looked really good. you know, Nick Anderson at one point looked good in his career. I don't feel like that's his role here. You know, your long love Chris Stratton has looked good in some capacities too. But and even John Schreiber, when they made that acquisition from Boston, I like the way Schreiber looked in the Boston bullpen last year. So you could see a lot of you know, I saw looking at roster resource and I see five different pitchers projected with at least one save here. Wouldn't surprise me if that happens. And I see MacArthur and Smith both splitting double digit saves type of situation. But you got to learn from your past mistakes. And I've previously written off, like, why is Smith here? And then he ends up doing more than I thought he would. So I'm not writing Smith off here. I would rather have Smith as my primary option here just because it keeps playing out well for him. Although that string of, hey, we won the World Series because we have Will Smith on our roster, that's got to end here. I don't see the Royals making the World Series.
Well, he doesn't need to end. He doesn't need to stay on the Royals for him to win the World Series.
That's true.
He can get traded once again. So I agree. I think Will Smith is kind of the guy entering the season. If Smith struggles, which he has done on occasion over the course of the last few years, James MacArthur would be the dude for me. I really, really liked what he did towards the end of last season. And he's been one of my more rostered relievers prior to the Will Smith trade as kind of my second or third closer. And now kind of just as a, you know, deeper league kind of high impact reliever. Yep. So, but I agree. I think it's Will Smith kind of in general until he either loses that job or gets traded. All right. Again, you got to win games in order to get saves. And the Chicago White Sox does not look like a team that's going to win a ton of games. Right now projected is John Brebbia, but I've been drafting a lot of Prelander Baroa, who was acquired from Seattle and is a live young arm. What are your thoughts on this White Sox bullpen?
See, it's funny. Like, Prelander Baroa was somebody that wasn't even on my radar until Meg Rowley mentioned him on the PitchCon podcast that I did. But that was before the trade. She was like, oh, this is a dark horse AL Rookie of the Year arm. And I was like, who in my head in the notes when I saw it, then I had to look it up. But you know, Brebbia, I like Brebbia. I wrote him up at RotoWire, but I would say the concern right now is he has not pitched in a game because he strained his calf doing some pitcher fielding drills. And they've had him in a walking boot and type of thing. So he may not be there to start the season. That said, he's on a 1-year contract. So ideally, you know, for Chicago, he comes up, you know, he gets on the mound, he gets some saves, they trade him and he loses his job. So I like Brebbia, but I also feel like his cap is like 15 saves because by the time, even if he gets the full-time job early with Chicago, he's going to get moved to the, wouldn't understand why Chicago would not try to aggressively move him in July. So, you know, don't take him hoping, oh, he's a sleeper 20 plus saves guy. I don't see that. I do like the skills. I just don't see that. But frankly, the rest of that bullpen is really messy too. I mean, Baroa may be the next guy, but you know, we said you said don't sleep on the Royals. I think the White Sox, and I've said this a couple of times, from a fantasy perspective, the lineup, the bats, the hate's gone a little too far. Like we're seeing, you know, like Andrew Benintendi is their projected leadoff hitter, and you're getting him in the 23rd, 24th round. You're getting Eloy, a guy that was a top 75 guy last year. Now he's going in the 150s. That said, the pitching staff does not look good. Dylan Cease may not be on this roster much longer. I know a lot of people are throwing darts at Eric Fetty and hoping that there's a bounce back from Michael Kopech and Mike Soroka, but this bullpen is bad. And I don't know what they're going to do. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me to see a guy like Jesse Chavez just because he has the experience. Alex Spies was a guy that I've seen pitch nicely for the Rangers, and it's got some upside, but throwing strikes is a major problem. But this bullpen is a bad situation. Like, Brebbia is honestly the only guy I would even consider drafting out of this bullpen in an AL-only league.
Yeah, also don't forget about Dominic Leone, who, you know, had some prospect hype when he was coming up as an electric reliever. You know how bad this bullpen is? Currently, as projected, they have three guys who are projected to make the team according to roster resource. They're on non-roster invites, like, that aren't even on the 40-man as we speak, but they're just going to throw crap against the wall. Baroa is not even projected to make the roster, which I'm a little bit miffed by. Maybe I need to pump the brakes a little bit on that. But I've been taking him in 30th round. kind of, you know, gambling and guessing. He's an easy drop if it doesn't work out.
I'm seeing some Jordan Leisure been ended up on teams as well. I saw his name pop up in a couple of drafts lately.
Yep, he may be one of the guys. I think this is a situation you should probably not enter into outside of maybe the last round of a draft. You throw a dart on the one guy you think has a shot, but like this could change hands a million times. They could just go straight committee with it. I do not think the White Sox are very good. I think they're the worst team in that division. So especially that rotation is
they're going to lose a lot of games, like 7-5.
Yeah. So interesting team to have in the 13 run pool that we're doing. We filled up the first one of those, and we are going to try to fill up a second one here. I've had a little bit of interest. So if you're interested in that, I ended up so far, we went with 10 people in the first one. And I ended up with the Orioles and the Tigers just trying to snipe Paul. So we'll see who I get in the last round of that. Let's move on over to the Rangers. I really, really thought they were going to end up with Hader. I think a lot of people thought they were going to end up with Hader. They don't. They bring in David Robertson. Jose Leclerc is still there, but Bruce Bochy's already said, like, he's not naming a guy yet. Are you drafting either Leclerc or Robertson?
I've taken both, but I prefer Leclerc. You know, it's when you look at, I know the old, this is where you have to dig into the in-season numbers. The overall numbers weren't great for him, but look at the second half. Look what he did in August and September. Even go and look at the stuff plus pitching plus location plus. Look at the splits on that in the second half. Leclerc was a different pitcher, and the velocity was getting better and better and better into the season. Gave up the two home runs to Altuve. But, you know, there are worse sins than doing something like that. I believe at the end of the day, this is Leclerc's job. Now, obviously, the shadow of Robertson is concerning. And if Robertson had not been added, then Leclerc's market price would be a lot higher than it is with that. But to me, Leclerc is the guy to target in this situation. But don't overpay. Don't reach, because, you know, Robertson is there, and we are talking about a veteran manager who may just say, that's my guy.
Yeah. I tend to agree with you. I think Leclerc is probably the guy ending in, but to me, it says something that, you know, you want a World Series with Leclerc and you're not just automatically going, hey, he's the guy. And as much as Bochy has been very loyal to whoever his guy is season to season, it has been season to season. All three of their World Series that Bruce Bochy won in San Francisco was with a different closer. Now, part of that was because Brian Wilson got hurt, but part of that is he just finds the guy he wants for that year and kind of rolls with him. So I wouldn't be surprised if David Robertson ends up being the guy, or what I think is more likely, they bring someone in halfway through the year who closes out games for them.
Yeah, like Jansen. That would be another possibility. And maybe if the Rangers media contract situation wasn't such in flux with Bally and whatnot, they may have done Hader. But when your contract situation was the way it was, perhaps that's why they're just rolling the dice this way, because they could afford this with or without the media deal.
All right. Let's finish out with the scariest closing job in all of sports, which is the Colorado Rockies. Do you care about them at all?
No, I don't. But I say that with a sour taste reminder how I wrote off Daniel Bard one year. I was like, this guy sucks. This ain't happening. And then Daniel Bard saved 30 that year and was great. So somebody's got to do something. I don't like either of these guys. I would say if you're still doing late drafts, Victor Vodnik is the name that I love out of this bullpen. I've taken him in the like 49th, 50th round in some drafting holds. I would consider him an NL-only reserve pick. Victor Vodnik's got the stuff. He just needs the chance. And Tyler Kinley and Justin Lawrence should not be blocking Victor Vodnik. I would like to see Vodnik make the roster. But go look up some YouTube clips of this guy. We're talking about a guy that throws triple digits. It's got stuff that can work, whereas the other guys, arm slot, gimmick, whatever. It's just like, to me, go with the kid and let the kid rock. So that's the guy. I've been avoiding the Colorado closers, but I don't play NL-only leagues. I don't have one this year, at least. So I've taken Vodnik in the 49th or 50th round of at least two drafting holds.
Yeah, I just stay away from Colorado. I don't think it's a very good team. I don't like guys pitching in Colorado to begin with, and now you're going to pitch half your games there. And I just don't think either of these guys are that special where it's going to make a difference. So
right.
I could easily see them kind of splitting saves, each getting like 13 or 14, and that's kind of and torching your ratios at the same time. So I stay away from Colorado guys, generally speaking, anyways. So, all right, that is going to do it for our closer preview. Is able to knock out all 30 teams in less than an hour. Jason, write everybody, reach on social media and talk about anything you got going on.
Yeah, so you can find me at Blue Sky or Threads at Jason Collette. You can collect calls. I did my AL labor recap write-up this a couple days ago. I'm getting ready to do like pitching pairs, looking at stats, looking for people to like, hey, these two pitchers, their name, you hide their names, look at the stats or some similar outcomes and look for some bargains there. And then you and I are heading to Tout next weekend. So we'll hopefully can do maybe a short, hey, this is how our draft went, kind of live together type of situation. I know I'm taking off Sunday afternoon at 3. I get in about Friday about noontime, but try to do a little bit of, hey, this is what I was going to do going into it, and this is what I ended up doing. And so, yeah, looking forward to this because this week's busy week. I got a draft tonight, local reset, OBP and Saves Plus Holds League. And that's what I love about this year. It's this draft. I have this month rather. I have a lot of drafts, but every single one of them is different. Labor was standard 5x5, but the roster management's different. Now I got this one with the different categories in Tout. Tout, we don't have a corner or middle infielder this year in AL only. We have a middle, we have a infielder. And so they took away the MI and CI. We have now an INF, and then we've already had the extra, we dropped an outfielder for a second swingman. So there's potentially three utility spots in Tout now. And so that's creative. And you know, so this month is definitely busy, going to Pittsburgh for work real quick for a day, going to Eric Hutchinson concert here in Charlotte on Thursday night. So it's going to be a busy week. Blink before I know it, and you and I will be together Friday somewhere.
Yeah, I'm going to be doing a ton of drafts. I'm doing one tonight. I'm doing an NFBC auction. My last one did not go very well, but I'm now at home doing it where I'm a little bit more comfortable and have a little bit better setup. So hopefully that one will go well. So I'll be streaming a bunch of drafts here over the next few weeks. I was going to say month, but really over the next 2 weeks or so. I got my main event coming up. I've got two NFBC $1,500 auctions for the auction championship. $250 auctions for the online auction championship. And I feel like there's another one, but I honestly can't remember. And then I'll see you in Tout, like you said, next weekend. I don't know if we'll have time to record something. If we do, maybe we could try to do something Saturday night after my auction or Sunday morning. I will bring my mic just in case if we want to try to figure something out for that. But I apologize ahead of time if the recordings aren't quite as forthcoming as they normally are. I'll be traveling a lot, and trying to get with Paul may be a little bit more difficult. And trying to get with you may be a little bit more difficult here over the next couple of weeks. But we will try to pump out as much content as we can. You can follow all my live streams on YouTube at Justin Mason FWFB, or on Twitch, Justin Mason FWFB, and then pretty much on Twitter or any social media, Justin Mason FWFB. So, yeah, that's going to wrap us up for this episode. For Jason, myself, thank you for listening. Have a fantastic draft season.
Yeah, thanks, guys.